Dobrý večer. Good evening. My name is Przemysław Dala. I'm the director of the Czech Center, and I'm really delighted to see so many of you here this evening, and welcome you in the next edition of the Women in Focus series. The program introduces inspiring women personalities and their accomplished professional journeys, and aims to unveil through dialogue and open discussion the intricacies of various fields. And I'm truly delighted that today we have a very special guest, Lady Milena Renfeld. Thank you. But Milena might not need an introduction to this audience. Nevertheless, I would like to mention that she came to United Kingdom on the last Nicholas Winton Kinder Transport train on the 31st of July 1939 from Czechoslovakia, and stayed in this country ever since. I'm not going to go through the many life milestones, as I'm certain Milena will share them with you with her typically humorous way. However, I'd like to mention one important moment that is almost 50 years after Milena entered UK, when she met at the famous BBC program That's Life for the first time Nicholas Winton. And since that time, their relationship has evolved into true and dear friendship. By the way, the story about Kinder transports and the life of Nicholas Winton is beautifully captured recently in the film One Life that concluded the Czech Center Made in Prague festival last December. And I see some faces that have joined us for the screening of the gala evening. So there is much more we can look forward this evening, as Milena is a woman of many virtues and professions, among them being interpreter, businesswoman, the lady Remoska, or a chairwoman of the Friends of the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra. Lady Milena has also received numerous accolades, such as Jan Masaryk Gratis Agit, Czech Women of the Year, Honorary University of Shire Fellow, a member of the Order of the British Empire. So with that, before I turn the floor to Milena, let me just say that this evening is going to be divided into three parts. The first part will be a talk and presentation by Milena. The second part will be a dialogue, a discussion with Milena's friend, but also acclaimed journalist, Ivan Kitka, join us for the second part, and the third part will be open for the discussion with you. So with that, enjoy the evening, and Milena, the floor is yours.
Well, good evening, everyone. I'm going to show you a PowerPoint presentation. Normally it takes 45 minutes, it's one I do in schools, and I'm having to cut it down to 25, so there'll be one or two pictures that I shall mull over. So here goes.
To England, for the children, there are trains.
That's an opening chorus for The Last Train to Tomorrow, which was written by Carl Davis, who sadly died not long ago. And these are children who are singing their trains to England. And I was on the last train that came to England. I'm going to skip through some of these because a lot of it will not be something that you don't know about. These are pictures of the extermination camps that were scattered through Poland. As I say, I show these to schools and they need longer explanations. but all of you will, of course, know what you're looking at. Well, that's 1938. My father, I was 8, and my sister, 2.5, walking through Prague. And the Holocaust Educational Association coined a special word for every year. And when I show these words, I say to the children, you know them, trains, but these were trains that took people to concentration camps. Labels that we wore on our necks when we were traveling. And I have that label here with me. Picture of Thomas Mann. The very reason my father had to leave the country, because he was responsible for obtaining Czech passports for Thomas Mann, who was exiled living in Switzerland and couldn't travel. And my father's admired his writing, suggested to our town, they made him an honorary citizen. And Benesch sent him to Switzerland, offered Thomas Mann and his family Czech passports, which he gratefully accepted, and with which he then traveled to America. And on the way to, my father was told he had to leave the country very quickly because he would be arrested by the Gestapo. And he was told to go to Berlin, where nobody would find him. And on the way, in the train, he met a lady who said that she will hide him for the night and ask her son to help him to leave the next day. And this is in 1939, on the 14th of March, the day when the Germans actually invaded the Czech Republic. The man that helped him to escape turned out to be a German officer who was a great admirer of Thomas Mann and put my father on the train. And my father met him 20 years later. There he is. He was found by friends in Germany. He was called Schreiber. And those of you who can read German, my father met the man that saved him again after 20 years. And that's how we looked when we presume Nicholas Winton received our photograph, where my mother told us in May that we were to go to England. And here's the very visa, or non-visa if you like, card that I had to carry when we travelled. And that was my sister when we arrived in Liverpool Street Station. She eventually went to America, became a headmistress, and in her 60s decided that she was Jewish, because we were never brought up in the faith. But she then wrote a whole book of poems, and this is a wonderful poem about her label, and she even had a bat mitzvah, accepted her Jewish nationality. And my grandfather gave me an autograph book on the night we were leaving Prague, and I have it here. And for the English people who can't read Czech, it says, remember to be a faithful daughter of the country that you're leaving, of your parents and of your grandfather, who loves you very much. And Prague, the 31st of July, 9 o'clock in the evening, that's when we were put on the train and we left. And that's the rucksack that we carried with us, which is now, along with the trunk, sitting in the Washington Museum. My sister donated both of those items there. And I told the children that I had three books with me. And for your English, I don't know whether any of your English people can recognize what they are. Anybody call out?
Wind in the Willows.
Wind in the Willows, absolutely. I show it to the children. And I didn't know I was carrying an English book with me. I had three. I had Wind in the Willows, I had Robinson Crusoe, and Uncle Tom's Cabin. And hands up of those of you who know what that is. Four hands that go up. It's about the slaves. And of course, the children looked totally blank. No idea what Uncle Tom's Cabin was until one little boy put his hand up. And he lived near Blackpool. He said, I know Uncle Tom's Cabin. It's a pub in Blackpool. So that was Uncle Tom's Cabin. And here we are at Liverpool Street Station, where we were collected by a family called the Ratcliffes, eventually to be called Daddy Ratcliffe, Mummy Ratcliffe, and Mary, who had a daughter. They lived in a terrace house, two up, two down, bath in the kitchen, loo in the yard, and they had a 16-year-old daughter. And because they didn't want to separate us, they sent their daughter to live with the grandmother so that we could live with them. And we were there with them for a year when miraculously my mother arrived in 1940, which was very rare, in February, and she came via Norway. And many, many years later, I discovered that the archives in Norway, there is a document saying that my mother, she arrived in Oslo in March 1940 from Prague, because at that time, Norway was still unoccupied. But two weeks after she landed in England, the Germans occupied Norway. So she was saved. So we were one of the few children that actually had parents in England, because most of those children, and I have to tell you, 10,000 kinder transport children came from Germany and Austria in 1938. Now they just came and came to camps. They were distributed later, but we didn't come until 1939. And before we could come, that of course we come to Nicholas Winton now. Winton had to find a family for all of us, and before he was allowed to bring us to England. So this is a document, and my mother was very lucky that she was able to join us. In 1942, the Czech government in exile opened a boarding school for children, and because my father didn't want me to forget my own language, I was sent to this boarding school. And when I told the children I went to boarding school, oh gosh, you know, that was very exciting. This looks very wonderful. It was a decrepit old manor house, which was literally had no heating, hardly any electricity. And when the ceiling fell down a year later, we were eventually sent to Wales, to a village called Llanotid Wells, where we spend the rest of our time. And we loved it. And Llanotid Wells is twinned with Český Krumlov to this day, because when we arrived there, it's right in the middle of the Brecon Hills. Hardly any English ever came there, and they saw this troop of foreigners arrive at school. And so to make ourselves known, we decided to invite the villagers and sang for them, sang a lot of Czech songs, but we finished off by singing My Hemlan Manadai in Anwili Mi, which is the land of my fathers in Welsh. And they adopted us immediately. And as I said, today, they are twinned with Český Krumlov. And there's only one person I know alive still that remembers the school. I still visit the place. And the school has now been turned into an adventure school. But they all remember the Czech students that were there. And there we are. There's me, you can see, smiling away. We were like a big family. We loved it. I was a dreadful pupil. I'm going to say it in Czech. Já jsem propadla ve škole. For those of you who don't understand, you had to be good at everything at your subjects. And if you weren't good at them, you had the summer to swat up. And I loathed my Latin, and I can't count. And I failed in both subjects, and I had to sit in the same class twice, which is a terrible disgrace. But somehow I got over it. I know that 1 and 1 is not 11 anymore. So, and I had my autograph book with me. And there we have Friends, 1943. Because when the school disbanded, we stayed in touch, all of us, for many, many years. As I said, we were like a family. Now, that's life. 40 years later, I get a telephone call, and this woman says, and I'm in the kitchen, you know, my place, this is Esther Anson. My answer was, oh, I'm the Queen of England. I thought a friend was joking, and she said, no, this is Esther Anson. I have in my hand a scrapbook belonging to a man called Nicholas Winton. Nicholas Winton, who organized the trains that you traveled on. And I am now 40 years on, I have almost forgotten what had happened to me. I'm married with children. Our parents never talked about the past. And this came as a total surprise. And most of you have probably seen the clip of That's Life. But this is a piece of film that has never been shown in public because Esther Hanson is talking about the fact what had happened.
I was producing and presenting a programme for the BBC called That's Life. It had a very big audience. But we invited Senator.
I'm in the blue dress.
To our studio without telling him that we were going to surround him with some of the people he'd saved. So we sat him in the front row and we didn't tell him who was sitting either side of him. This is a picture of Nicholas Winton himself with one of the children he rescued. If you look at the very back of this scrapbook, and the moment came, and I revealed to Nikki and to Vera that they were sitting next to each other. And it was absolutely magical. Vera Gissing is with us here tonight. Hello, Vera. And I should tell you that you are actually sitting next to Nicholas Winton.
You've got to know her very well. Vera Gissing, they became good friends.
It was the most important, most meaningful moment in my whole life, because without him I wouldn't have been sitting there.
Well, obviously, I mean, I show on the film how I felt. Everybody was in tears, even Esther.
This is the only time in my whole career when I had to stop filming because I couldn't go on, because it was too moving. To hear about people like Mr. Winton and the foster families and the rescue committees, I'm sorry, I've gone now.
She stopped the filming at that point. It was never shown on the screen, but we've got this little piece.
I had to borrow Mr. Winton's handkerchief in order to carry on, wipe my eyes and carry on.
You said that if there is anybody in the audience today who was on Nicholas Winton's list and knows they left him, would they stand up?
That was the following week.
Is there anyone in our audience tonight who owes their life to Nicholas Winton? If so, could you stand up, please? And Nicholas turned round and saw the whole theatre standing up. Literally hundreds of people who owed their lives to him.
And Nick's life was very ordinary and quite privileged before he started working with the children. There he is, skating, and he was also a very, very good fencer. And if it hadn't been for the war, he was about to fence in the Olympics, actually. There he is on the right-hand side, the young man, fencing. Married a Danish lady, and there he is with his mum. So just a few shots of Nicholas as a young man. He then joined the Air Force. Well, he drove an ambulance in Dunkirk at first and then joined the Air Force and became a flight instructor. And these are some of the Windermere boys that you may have heard of that were brought over to England after the war. And Nicholas, to be able to bring children to England, had to make a list. And when he was in Prague in 1939, January, he had 2,000 people outside his hotel, begging him, please put our children's names on your list to get them to England. And so this is a sample. There you can see our names with 42 Cedar Street, Ashton Underline, and Roland Ratcliffe, 72 Alexandra Street. 41 Cedar Street is where we eventually moved with my parents. And how could Nicholas get children to England? He had to advertise. And this is a sample of a page out of the Picture Post. Who can remember Picture Post? Sure. There's a lady nodding her head here. And this is Picture Post in 1939. And these are letters from people all saying, we will adopt and take a child. And above there, what our readers say, they said they had thousands of letters that came to Picture Post willing to foster children. And that's how Nicholas was able to get us over to England. He visited Prague many times, and everyone in Prague knows Nicholas Winton's name. This was a conference, a meeting that we attended when he was into his 90s.
Experience this evening, and that it's really not the right time for me to make a speech, although my family are very afraid that I'm going to, because I love talk. I'll leave you, however, just with only two words which you'll have to interpret for yourselves. One is ethical. Ethics should be the background of all religions and should be a unifying factor in the world. And the other is compromise, without which not even a marriage could exist. And although it's got rather a nasty feeling, unless we and everybody else leads an ethical life and are prepared to compromise, the future is only going to be bleaker than it seems to be at the moment. Thank you.
Nicky loved flying. When he was 104, I received a message from Prague to say that friends were coming over in a four-seater Cessna. Would he like a flight? And his daughter said, well, you know, he's a bit frail, but he said, oh yes, he definitely would. And so we drove down to Maidenhead and took him to this. And Barbara looked at this four-seater, it's like four chairs with an engine, and said, I'm not getting in that. And I climbed in behind him. And so we took off. And as we were flying, every plane has dual controls. And once we were in the air, the pilot calmly pointed to the ones in front of Nicholas, who nodded his head. And for half an hour, I was being flown by a 104-year-old pilot. Because that's exactly what he did, he just took over. And when the plane landed, he got out and said, huh, just like riding a bicycle, you'll never forget. And there we are, taking off. That, there you are, that's him. I was sitting just behind him, ready. I think I had my eyes closed most of the time. And he was a great Rotarian, and this happens to be a picture taken at home because there was a big conference in Blackpool, at Rotary, and he came and he stayed with me. When he died, within 1 month, the Czech Post published a stamp. And we thought that in England it was time that something was done also, and we got in touch with the Royal Mail, and we were told it took about 3 years of conferences before they decided whether they actually would publish a stamp of someone known. And they did eventually publish it. I haven't got a picture of it, but it took 3 years before we got a picture of Nicky on a stamp in this country. But within 1 month, it was published in Prague. When he was well into his 90s, he was being visited by one of us who had gone to school with him, with us, who was living in Israel, a man called Hugo Maron. And Hugo said, you know, Nicky, you're famous. People know about us. But the heroes were our parents who put us on the train. And it's time we had a memorial for them. And he said, yes, he said, and not before time. But now there were not many of us left, and there was a friend in Prague called Zuzana Marišová. And Hugo went back to Israel, phoned me and said, organize a memorial. How do you start? How do you get the idea? So we very quickly formed a little committee in Prague, Zuzana and I, and we were advised to go for a competition, which we did, but we didn't like any of the designs. And Zuzana said to me, you know, I remember being at the station and our parents waving goodbye to us. And I said, that's the memorial. And we found an artist who drew our idea of parents waving goodbye to the children. And then we had to start finding how it's going to be made. We found a man in Slovakia who copied trains, and he copied a door from a train back to 1940. And we had to go public, we had to, because people were giving us money, you know, all over the place. So we had to find, offer different various glass engravers the job of making the glass. And one of them so desperately wanted to make this. I mean, he offered a very little price. And so we had our memorial, which now stands on Prague railway station. And the little hands in the window are my great-grandchildren, my great-granddaughters and the great-grandsons of Zuzana. And our own hands are the large hands that are on the front. We had to ask for money all over the place. And the biggest amount that was given to us by the most reviled man in the Czech Republic, who gave us almost half the amount, was Andrej Babiš. He wouldn't advertise it, never made it public. We didn't get a penny from the government. He came to the opening alone and said he wanted absolutely no publicity. But if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have had that memorial. He gave us almost half the money, and I say it didn't come from the government. I've had to cut this down very quickly, so thank you for your kind attention. 25 minutes, spot on. Before Ivan and I start chatting, I want to show you one book. It's called When the World Was Ours. It's a book written by Alice Kessler, who is a granddaughter of Czech refugees. And if you have any older teens in your family, it was written especially for them. It's about three children, two Jewish children and a non-Jewish child living in Vienna. It's based on a real fact that happened to the grandparents who I knew, and I highly recommend it. It's one of the best books I've ever come across, written for young people.
Thank you, Milena. What a fascinating story. What a lady tonight. I have to admit, as a journalist, I did quite a few interviews with Lady Milena, and in the last 28 years we know each other, and each time she's able to surprise me with something really touchingly human and unexpected, and always with a nice joke as well. Thank you for that, Milena, as well. You spoke mostly about the time when you arrived to Britain and Nicholas Winton, but there is another almost 80 years to cover, so I don't know how we do it in 5 or 10 minutes, but tell us, you always kept a very close relationship to the Czech Republic, even in the times when there were dark times in former Czechoslovakia. You, audience didn't know, but you speak perfect Czech and you can write perfect Czech, much better than some other Czechs I knew here in this country. What was it what made you to be so close to Czechoslovakia and Czech Republic?
Well, first of all, I think it was the family. I don't know, although we never came back, never went back, my father would have done. But very quickly, when we realized the political situation, we decided to stay in England. But I always, in my soul, I think it's the soul of music and culture, you know, for Czech. But we adapted to live like English people. My mother was a doctor, my father was an accountant, and we became absolutely English. My sister did forget, she was only three, and she, within the year that we were living with the English family, she did forget, but she has relearned Czech.
No. From the first time you were able to come back to what was Czechoslovakia, was it in the 60s, and you came as an interpreter for English Chamber of Commerce to promote Czechoslovak English?
No, it was before that, actually. The very first time we came back was in 59, and we were actually driving through Yugoslavia. We were going down to a place called Petrovaz na Moru, and intended to drive back through the Czech Republic. And when we came back through Vienna, I mean, it was Yugoslavia, then it was quite different. And on the border, my two elder daughters that were with us said to me, pretend you can't speak Czech, which was the same thing. So I just sat there, and the two guards looked at my passport and said, tak co, máme je pustit, nebo je máme nechat? Should we let them go, or should we let them sweat? That was a question. So we drove to Prague, and at that time we could only visit friends in hotels, we couldn't go to their homes. We were there for 4 days. But later on, I came back to Prague as an interpreter for the London Chamber of Commerce. Then when 89 happened, and by now we had Libor Pešek conducting in Liverpool Philharmonic, we started travelling to Czechoslovakia at the time. I suppose 20 times over 20 years I've taken groups there for music and festivals. The Chopin Festival, Pražské Jaro. The Phil was the first foreign orchestra that actually opened the Prague Pražské Jaro with Libor Pešek and Havel came to that performance. We've got a photograph here.
Yeah, I'll show it a few minutes later. Maybe we should mention that the driver who took you to the Czech Republic in 1959 was your husband, Sir George. Would you tell us how did you meet him? And you got married in 1954. The reason for that is that he was one of the leading English architects, very distinguished architect, who made your life richer, obviously.
Well, I met George after I left school. I came home, trained as a nursery nurse, and then au paired. It went to France for 2 years, and au paired in France. Came back, and my father said he'd met a very interesting man, who was George, who was older than I was, an architect, and we married. And I very quickly sort of started, well, he knew I was Czech. And we were the very first firm that was able to employ Czech architects in England. We got permission to bring them over. And then we drove to Prague a number of times. We drove right through the country, took lots of photographs. His firm was an unusual firm. It was a firm that shared all the income.
Cooperative firm.
Yes, it was a sort of cooperative firm, that's right, for many, many years. He lectured all over Europe. He spent 2 months lecturing in Russia. That was interesting, because he wrote back, and every letter came back within 3 or 4 days, which was most unusual. And my daughter at the moment is now transcribing them all. And the only time he got stopped taking photographs was twice, and once was outside a bank, where there was the uniformed man, like a guard, who stopped him. And once in an airport, which is not very surprising, really. But on the other hand, he was at Baikal, and they were building a new factory, and he asked if he could photograph it, and they lit it up for him. Everywhere he went, he had absolutely no problems. He went to Akademgorod. And his last town was still Leningrad. And he was walking outside at night, and he was stopped by a total stranger. A man stopped him. The Russian could see he was stopping a foreigner. And he spoke a little English. And when my husband explained to him that our eldest daughter had married a Frenchman, he said, "She is allowed?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "Englishmen are free." And that really was the last letter he wrote when he came home. That was the last sentence. The Englishmen are free. Because he had a wonderful trip around.
It seems to me that you are a very adventurous family, because one of your family trips, holiday trips, was to the Soviet Union, to the country which is now facing Russian invasion in Ukraine. Tell us about your trip to Odessa, and actually what was so attractive for you guys crossing the Iron Curtain?
I can tell you, when he was in Russia, he came across two students who wanted to buy his camera, and he wasn't going to do that, and came back and corresponded. My 16-year-old daughter then corresponded with the student, and George decided that we would go on holiday because we had a Yugoslav architect who was a friend, who tried to persuade us to go there. So he looked at the map, and he said, "Well, we'll go to Odessa. We'll drive to Odessa."
By car.
1962, I think. And he thought, Preston, Munich one day, Munich, Ljubljana next day, Petrovaz na Moru the third day. Sorry, I'm mixing the two countries. This is Odessa, yeah. It took us more than a week to get there, actually. It wasn't quite as simple as we thought. But when we were driving back, it was interesting. We had to park the car once we were in Odessa. We couldn't just use it to go around. But driving back, we exited through the wrong road in a village somewhere in Russia. Within 5 minutes, the motorcycle police caught up with us, very polite, telling us we were on the wrong road. And the kids couldn't understand, how did they know? And when they got us back into town, outside every village and every town, there were lookout posts. And in those days, there were not many foreign cars trailing around Russia. And they could see us go in, so when they didn't see us go out, they sent out a search party to see where we were, to put us back on the right road.
Maybe I can share with you one secret. Milena is still a keen driver, and she just passed her extra driving test for another
2 years. I've just been given another 2 years. I'm not telling how old I am.
Maybe we can speak about your love for Czech music, because it's this year Czech Centre music, year of Czech music. Did you play any instrument at the school you showed us?
No, I wanted to sing, but I didn't play anything. But what's wonderful, only yesterday I was in Liverpool, and because there was a reunion of the Merseyside Youth Orchestra, a young orchestra when they were celebrating, I think, 60 years. But I used to travel with them 20 years ago. I was known as a mum. And a young timpanist prior to that was a young boy called Simon Rattle.
Wow.
Simon Rattle, who was with us yesterday, who Libor Peshek, 10 years in Liverpool. Simon Rattle has now become the guest conductor of the Czech Philharmonic. And he was, as a young boy, a timpanist in the Merseyside Youth Orchestra. And there was Simon yesterday conducting the orchestra, and we shall be seeing lots of him. And of course, the Czech connection is married to Magdalena Kožená. And so somehow Liverpool and the Czech Republic, there's always been a great
special connection. Yes, special
connection there.
You didn't mention, or I didn't mention, that you also met all four Czech presidents. You met once or twice the late Queen Elizabeth. You also sold Remuska to current King Charles.
Well, I don't know whether, but I think most of you, most of the Czech people know what a Remuska is. It's a cook pan, okay? It's a cook pan. And it's very practical, it's very cheap, it cooks a lot better than most ovens. And we introduced it to England quite a few years ago. And when you were listening to the song, The Last Train to Tomorrow, it was being performed at the Roundhouse, and Prince Charles was there. And it was in November, and the Czech Remuska people had sent me a new one for his birthday. So I had to ask permission whether we could give it to him. So it had to go through the, you know, like you go through the airport to be, you know, through this...
Security gate.
That's right. And in the interval, he came out, and a few of us were standing around, and I gave him the box and thank you very much, you know. And so thank you for my lap. But a few weeks later, we got a very nice letter to say that the Remuska was in the kitchen.
Oh.
In the kitchen. But the second time, he does invite survivors every year to St. James's Palace for afternoon tea. And survivors and people like us, some of the train children. And one year when he came, I had back in the Czech Republic a cousin who had survived 3 concentration camps, one of the few relations, who eventually became a very, very famous harpsichord performer called Zuzana Růžičková. And she had just recorded the complete works of Bach. And I had them with me, and I gave them to Prince Charles. And 3 weeks later, she phoned me to say that he had written to her thanked her.
Yes, fascinating.
That was very good. Yes.
Did you ever have a favorite member of the royal family?
Well, actually, this book I've just shown you, I sent it to Camilla, and she's written back and said thank you very much, because I thought she could give it to her. Her grandchildren as well, yes.
How about Czech presidents? You met all of them?
Well, we met. You've got a picture of Havel. Is it upside down? No? That was actually the night when the Liverpool Phil played in Prague. And that's in the green room. And then some of you whom I remember, there was on the Rotama, there was a restaurant, like a floating restaurant. There were a few nodding heads. And all the orchestra went down to have a party, and Harold came with us to that part, yes.
Yeah. That I should probably mention that you also had met the latest president. You just came back 3 weeks ago from Prague, is it
yes,
correct?
Yes, I don't know how many of you have seen the film One Life. And the premiere was in Prague just over 3 years ago, so 3 days, 3 weeks ago. And Petr Pavel came and spent the entire week evening with us, talked to us, sat through the film, came to supper, and he's a very nice man, I have to say.
Perhaps a last question for me. You are well known as a brilliant networker. If there are networkers in this whole, what's the secret of being a brilliant networker? How do you connect people naturally?
It's not what you know, it's who you know, isn't it? you just pass the name around.
I did. Okay, time for the questions from you, audience.
Lady Malena, we've gone through many decades, but I just want to take you back to that train ticket that you showed us, which had number 638 on it, I think. Is that how many children were on the train?
No, my number...
It has 638 or 639 on the top left-hand corner.
641.
641. So what was the train like?
Mine was the last train. There were 669 children altogether. It's 80 odd. I really can't remember physically, what it was like. I did meet someone back at school who said that she was in the same compartment, and she said, as the train was leaving, we held hands and we said, "Nebudeme brečet," we're not going to cry.
Nebudeme brečet.
But that's the only memory I have. And of course we traveled right through the night and on into Holland. And the other thing that a lot of people talked about between them, and it's been written up elsewhere, when we were in Holland, and we were then put on this big ship on the sea, and the first thing we were given was tea with milk. And nobody liked tea with milk. And the other thing was white bread sandwiches. And we all wanted our Czech bread. And food is the sort of memories you have, because I know the family we lived with, Mummy Radcliffe, was a very good cook. And I remember plum pies and Yorkshire pudding with syrup. I remember playing a game called Kick Can out in the street. And Ashton-under-Lyne is a very Lancashire town. And I remember the market and people eating tripe and onions. And I hate to tripe. So these are sort of memories that stay in your mind.
Another question?
My question pertains to, what are your memories of Prague before you left? Do you have any impressions? I know that you were quite small, but I'm sure it must have been...
My memories of Prague itself, none really, except I do know that my grandfather used to take me to the children's theatre. And I know that on Karlovarské náměstí, there was a shop that sold very, very good bramborové placky, potato cakes. And I used to go to Sokol in Vyšehrad, if I remember that. And because I've been back, and I've been back to the street, to look at the house, I must have gone to school nearby, but apart from that, I really remember nothing of the city. I mean, I did talk about this memory business with a psychiatrist, and he said, it's not surprising that you cannot remember after all these years. Yeah. I mean, some children did. But in my case, nothing, some of them, far worse things happened, particularly the ones who left from Austria and Germany. They went through the Kristallnacht, they went through the German occupation, they went through the business of their father being taken away and arrested. See, none of the nasty things really happened to us. So I sometimes feel sort of bit guilty that I'm sort of telling this story when there are lots of other people who could tell you probably worse things than I can.
Thank you so much for a wonderful talk. I am just amazed how incredibly eloquent and sprightly you are, and I hope I'll live as long as you and have the brains that you have. I was just curious if at the time you were on the train you knew of Nicholas Winton, or whether you got to know of him later on.
No, it was 40 years. The first time I got to know about him was when Esther Ranson found him. Yes, absolutely. No one else knew. And what amazed me was in his scrapbook, we found my father's business card. So we worked out finally, because my father was already in England in March. Nicholas had been to Prague in the January. So it's quite possible my father might have known what was happening, sent a message, but to us it was a total mystery.
Thank you very much for this. It's all very interesting. I wanted to ask, as you mentioned, that you're walking or visiting schools and you're telling your story to children. I would be curious, how do the children in general respond, or what age, and what are they maybe the most interested in? And I spoke lately with Nick Winton, the son of Sir Nicholas Winton, and I know he mentioned that it's very difficult and he's always thinking about how to best transmit the experience and explain it to the children. So I would be very interested to see.
I've been going to school now for 10 years, really. But we always insist, this is through the Holocaust Educational Trust, mostly. And the children have to be told something beforehand. You can't just tell the story code. The youngest ones are 11 and 12. And it's surprising, and they ask the most questions. I've got hundreds of letters from the children, and I use one, and I'll show one sample one. And this is from an 11-year-old girl. And she writes to say that she had a 3-year-old brother at home, and she helped her mother sometimes, and she couldn't understand how I could look after my sister all that way. That when she went on a camping holiday for a week, she was homesick, and she couldn't understand how we were not homesick for our parents. And I sometimes say to the children, do you ever say, I hate you, to your parents? And they put their hands up. And when you asked us about our parents, I treasure my parents lots because I have parents to treasure. And that's a letter from an 11-year-old child. And I do have lots of letters, and the teachers do comment. The teenagers don't like asking questions. They do afterwards in class. But I get comments from the teachers that they all really sit and listen. I've got 5 schools next week. It's a constant week asking you to come. I'm even going to football academies.
Oh, there is another question that I was about to talk about football.
Thank you so much. I wanted to ask you about something a little bit different. The conversation that you had with your friends in the 1950s when you visited Czechoslovakia, you mentioned that you had to go to the hotel. I just wanted to ask about that, how it felt to speak to people who stayed and perhaps experienced a different regime than you did when you stayed in England.
We could only meet our friends in hotels, you mean? Well, it was very restricted. I mean, my father actually travelled back a lot, and I was often surprised he was never arrested, because he used to stay at the Arkrom, and he was very outspoken when he used to travel to Prague, because we had friends there. But there were friends and relations, and we just greeted them. It was a very simple conversation. But when I was there as an interpreter for the London Chamber of Commerce, and again I was there for when they allowed computers, the first time they allowed computers to be shown in Prague, these were big rooms that were air-conditioned. A year ago, when some of the documents were, the communist documents came to light, we found a whole pile of reports about me, about every conversation, every telephone, conversation I had during the time I was there as the interpreter, because that was still in the communist days when they first allowed the London Chamber of Commerce to have exhibitions in Prague. And I've got pages, and I can't believe it.
We can still come to football 1996 to Europe 96. You were basically hosting the Czech team, the Czech coach in Preston. They were your guests in a way, and the Czech team made it to the final. How did it happen that you lured the Czech national representation to Preston? Because obviously they had...
Actually, the Football Association sent the various teams to various towns, and it was by pure chance that the Czech team was sent to Preston and housed in a very nice hotel just up the road, if you like. And as soon as I heard there was a Czech team there, I went to see the manager, and I wanted to find out, and they brought their own chef with them, and I said, have they got a little rhubarb mocha, you know, because at that time you couldn't get the Czech flour, and he said he'd brought a good supply. But the Czech team were very popular. They were right next door to a junior school, and they used to kick the ball around, you know, on the field. I mean, a lot of the teams, I believe, kept themselves very much themselves. And I had a wonderful butcher who said to me, do you think they would come to a barbecue? And Mr. Ulmarin, who was the trainer, said, well, if they play well in the next 2 weeks, I would allow it. And so the two coaches and the butcher lived in a little village. We drove out, and we had this wonderful barbecue there, and he said, to this day, it's the best day of his life when he had a Czech team having a barbecue in the kitchen. And on that day, all the wives arrived, because they were allowed to come. And I remember all these ladies turning up at the barbecue, sort of in their high heels, looking rather, ooh, you know,
vegetarians.
But they were sort of slightly apprehensive at the easiness of the event. And I was then asked to take the wives out for the day on the day the boys were playing. So we got a coach and took them to the Lake District, which is not far. And it was a beautiful day. And two of the mothers came, Mr. Schmitz's mother came, and another, and they thought it was wonderful. But these girls, all they were looking for shops, and we were on the lake, sailing away on Lake Windermere, and they were sitting there, Zmnyaki or Pony.
With your help and with your support, the Czech team made it to the final in 1996. Did you manage to go and watch the final?
Yeah. Well, I had never seen a football match before, but I have to say, we went to all the matches, and my biggest memory of the final was meeting Placido Domingo, because he was there.
Not playing football.
But I remember, yes, very sadly, most of you know they lost, but they lost in the...
Germany.
Yeah, but it was not in the play, it was in the...
Extra time.
Oh. It was in the extra time. And the entire stadium were wanting the Czechs to win. It was also obvious. Yeah,
because the Germans beat the English.
Yeah, the Germans beat the English, and this was the final. Yeah. Yes, and I remember Poborski then came to Manchester. They were given a house to live in, and Mrs. Poborska was told that she could go on and go shopping, whatever she needed for the house. And she spoke no English, so I went with her, and we went to this huge shopping mall, and she said, I love this, I love this, I love this. they were just given a carte blanche to furnish their house as they wanted. But he then went, because Poborski was in Manchester, and two of the guys joined Liverpool.
So Sir Winston, I guess, parted on two words in one of the videos with the orchestra. Based on your past experiences throughout your life, what would your two words be to describe?
Love your fellow man.
Do you have any, what are your, or do you have any diet tips or recommendations that will let us follow on your
for diet trips? So, James.
So if there are no any more questions, I really would like to thank on behalf of everyone for the multifaceted evening. We covered sport, cooking, of course, the early journey here. And it's been really a delight and pleasure to wait. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For joining us. And thank you, of course, to all of you for joining us. I think we're going to have some time also to sip a glass of wine. And if you enjoyed this evening, we'll continue with this series, Women in Focus. The next one will be in April. And we're going to have a guest, Kamila Popřina, some of you might know her. She is the rabbi at the Westminster Synagogue. But before April, we're going to have a number of another events which have run on the loop. Just next week, there's going to be a film, Is There Any Place For Me, Please, which is on Wednesday, on the 6th. And the 12th, we're going to have, I think, a wonderful evening dedicated to Bedřich Svetana, to his life and work. So you are all invited to join us as well. So thank you again. Have a good evening.